Our next case is Lockheed Martin Aeronautics Company versus Secretary of the Air Force, number 22-1035. Mr. Matheson, you reserve 3 minutes of time for rebuttal. Is that correct? Okay. We're ready when you are.
May it please the Court, Your Honors, Sky Matheson for Appellant Lockheed Martin. The defendization clause of our contract says that the government may determine a fixed price, a reasonable fixed price for the contract, and if they do so, then the plain language tells us that that decision, that determination...
Let me ask you a couple, just some preliminary type questions. Have you filed a contractor's claim in the cases? I understand that there has been, right, for the Korea project and the Singapore project.
Subject to the dismissal of the board, after that, we filed a monetary claim, yes.
Okay. And you haven't taken any action other than receive the denial from the contractor?
We are in ASBCA litigation in the early stage discovery.
Oh, okay, so it's at the board?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we have two cases that are dealing with the same subject?
Wait, so you've already filed contractor's claims on both of these cases. You've already gotten a contracting officer's final decision, presumably not agreeing with you, and you're already in litigation at the board over what's a fair and reasonable price?
Your Honor, if I can correct, there's not two contractor claims. There's one government claim that we appealed immediately, as the plain language says we can.
No, I don't want to talk about this. What's going on with... I thought you said after this case, you filed actual claims...
Correct, Your Honor.
...directed to these definitizations.
Yes, Your Honor. Those are contractor monetary claims. So after we appealed the government's decision, got dismissed, we then filed a contractor monetary claim, and that's at the board in litigation.
What do you mean when you say contractor monetary claim?
So a contractor monetary...
Because the government set out a price here. What is your claim with regard to that? Are you saying the price should be bigger or that you deserve more money under the contract?
Your Honor, the contractor monetary claim sets forth the actual incurred and expected forecasted costs, sets forth what a reasonable price could be. That is distinct. It's a distinct request, claim, and remedy from what is at issue here from this appeal. This appeal is the government's determination of a reasonable price. It needs to follow the correct standards, apply the correct standards, reasonable.
But it's essentially the same issues, correct? The reasonableness of the definitive price.
No, Your Honor. They may share similarities, but they are wholly different in both the request and the remedy.
I'm just wondering whether you've mooted this case.
Your Honor, no. It's not moot. There is a live dispute still present in both actions. Lockheed Martin hasn't received a reasonable price in either action. We have an ongoing cognizable interest.
You're basically arguing the same arguments. You bring it to us, you're arguing those arguments before the board.
No, Your Honor. We're arguing it's a different claim.
Well, it's a different theory, but it's the same issues, the same contracts, correct?
Same contracts, Your Honor. But this court's precedent in Alliant and Todd tells
us... Let me ask you, I know you want to get to your argument, and you have interesting arguments, I will admit, but the end result is you have a price that you think is the reasonable price. It's not different in this case or the other case, is it? It's the same reasonable price. And you're going to put on proof whether you have to do it in this case if we remand to the board, or you have to do it in the contractor monetary claim.
No, Your Honor, they're different. Because when the government...
Tell me what the bottom line number, how is it different in these two cases of what you're seeking?
Because, Your Honor, in this appeal from the government's decision, we are not seeking a number. We are not asking for money, and we are not seeking a price. What is at issue is whether the government applied the correct standards to arrive at its reasonable number, which is the remedial process the drafters enshrined in the definitization clauses, that they must pick the reasonable number. This is a declaration from the board that the government either did or did not apply the correct standards to vacate, allow the parties to go back and resolve it the way the FAR drafters intended, where the parties can resolve it. Now, that goes back to the process where the parties can either...
But that dispute is already in play in your other case because you've come in and said, here's what we think the reasonable price is and what we think we're deserved.
But respectfully, Your Honor, it's different because the issue at the board is not the price that we...
If we vacate this case and send it back and the board says, oh, the government's price is unreasonable, are you going to go back to the government and say, oh, well, we want a different number than we already asked you for?
On the merits, Your Honor, if the board sides with the government, then that would likely end the process.
You're not really addressing what we're honestly annoyed with here, which is, why didn't you just file a contractor claim in the first place? Is this all about the burden of proof?
No, Your Honor, it's about the plain language and about
The practical effect of this is you want a fair and reasonable price. You think the definitization the government gave you is not fair. And if you appeal, if it's a government claim and you can appeal directly and it goes to the board, they bear the burden of proof, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And on the contractor claim that you submit to the CO for a final decision, and if you lose, you bear the burden of proof.
Correct, Your Honor. But again, we're not seeking the price here. The board, and again, this is not unusual. It seems unusual, but it's not unusual. This court has already looked at the language that says the government's decision is directly appealable, and we've already addressed this in Alliant and in Todd Construction and in Garrett.
It still has to be a government claim to be appealable, though.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It still needs to be a government claim. We know it's a government claim.
And really, the law is not that clear on that particular issue.
We believe the law is very clear on this issue that it's a government claim. If I
so
may.
The question goes back, why didn't you just file, instead of arguing and taking this up, appealing directly on the basis that this is a government claim, why didn't you just file a claim with a contractor and go that way?
Because this court's precedent tells us we don't need to.
No, but practically, I'm concerned whether we're going to create a rule that says that that parties don't have, for example, judicial review under a government contract claim or something of that nature. And I'm trying to understand from you, why did you pursue this route as opposed, which is not clear, and that's a government claim route, as opposed to just filing your claim before the contractor, getting a denial, and proceeding, just like you've already done. I mean, you've done that already. You've covered yourself in both options. I think you have a problem. I mean, is our decision today going to affect one way or another the action before the board, or would our decision today?
No, what if the board, if we send this to the board and say the board, can't the board just say, well, we're going to stay this part of the case and we're just going to go ahead on the contractor claim and determine what the fair and reasonable price is?
The merits are for the board, Your Honor. The jurisdiction is for this court. This is a government decision under both the plain language and this court's precedent.
I know, but you're frustrating at least me because you're presenting theoretical arguments. And of course, the contractor community would love to create even more exceptions to getting a final contracting officer's decision. There is no doubt, because then you can go straight to the board. But practically speaking, you have the claim before the board that will resolve the underlying dispute, which is how much should the government pay you for these contracts? It's there. And we wouldn't have had to engage in what is very, you know, difficult reasoning under difficult precedent that's not clear at all if you just filed a contractor claim in the first place.
Respectfully, Your Honor, this court's precedent tells us we don't need to.
I don't think that our precedent is anywhere as near as clear as you think it is.
Right, Your Honor.
So I know we've taken up most of your time asking you about the practical. What's the best case? And tell me the facts of that case.
The best case, Your Honor, for the fact that a contracting officer's decision that says, when the language says a contracting officer's unilateral price determination is immediately appealable because it has that language subject to appeal, then the best case for that, James Ellett Construction, Your Honor's decision, for the proposition that these government claims are not unusual and they exist.
What was the government contractor's officer's decision in that case?
There was a unilateral price determination with the same language subject to appeal. It's at page 1545 of James Ellett Construction.
A unilateral price determination that did what?
That set the price on a termination for convenience. That language has already been interpreted by this court. It means subject to appeal. So here, where is the claim?
When it's a price on a termination convenience, it says, we're terminating, and this is what we owe you or you owe us, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So it is actually determining something that you're currently owed either adversely to you.
If I may, The language that I was saying for the proposition is that it's subject to the right of appeal. We immediately appealed. We followed the plain language. Yes, the termination for convenience sets forth a different regulatory process because it says the contractor must certify its settlement proposal. So it's a different process. The drafters know how to make something a contractor claim. They set it in a termination. The drafters know how to not
Are
make something.
Are you relying on this language subject to right to appeal based on the disputes clause? Because the disputes clause doesn't excuse you from getting a final contracting officer's decision if it's a contractor claim.
Your Honor, this court has already interpreted what is subject to appeal as provided in the disputes clause mean. We've already interpreted that as provided in the disputes clause means how the appeal is taken under paragraph F of the disputes clause. That means to the board or to the court and make it timely. Disputes modifies how the appeal is taken. It doesn't say that this shall be a dispute in the disputes clause that you can appeal. We've already interpreted this language. Again, that's James Ellett Construction at page 1540.
I think that's a very different kind of final contracting officer's decision. We know that terminations for default by the contracting officer are a government claim because they adversely affect the contractor. We know that terminations for convenience that say the contractor owes us X dollars or we're only going to give you this amount of dollars adversely affects the contractors. How do we know that a definitized contract is adverse to you until you come in and say that price is too low? And why shouldn't that be directed to the contracting officer in the first place?
Because, Your Honor, first, if I may, it is clearly against us if this is an argument that the government made about adversity.
No, it's against you until you say it's too low.
No, Your Honor, because once the government asserts, unlike the changes clause or termination where the contractor asks for something, here the regulatory structure tells us that it's the government making its definitization determined. The government is saying, I want to stop the process. This comes at the end of a very lengthy process. This is a final decision. We negotiated the price for 5 years. It's such a final decision that the contracting officer is not even entitled herself or himself to make this determination. The head of the contracting activity, the deputy assistant secretary, needs to make this determination. It's a final government determination.
When the government made that determination, did it make an adjustment to the underlying contract or did it make a modification? And is there any difference between the two?
Your Honor, we would argue that it made a modification and adjustment. We know it's a modification because they issued written modifications. And those modifications adjusted the contract. How? The contract beforehand was a cost reimbursement structure. Lockheed Martin, there was no fixed prices. We performed the work. We were getting reimbursed. There was no harm. The government, by written modification, adjusted the entire contract. They removed the cost reimbursement structure. They removed all of the FAR clauses that related to the cost reimbursement structure. They inserted a raft of new clauses dealing with their new fixed price contract, and they inserted new fixed prices. It's a modification for sure. It fits with an adjustment under the plain language and under this court's decision in Alliant of how broad an adjustment can be, and certainly this court's the progeny down at the lower courts of how broad a government adjustment claim can be. We've argued, Your Honor, that this is cognizable as a FAR 2.101 adjustment type claim. This is clearly an adjustment, but even if we don't believe it's an adjustment, there's a residual clause, an other relief type of a claim that it could be. And that's court has already told us in Todd Construction and in Garrett, and we've told us in Malone, that this is an extremely broad category. It's of substantial breadth, is what Todd Construction told us. Many things can fit in there. Is it defined in regulation? No. It's a residual clause that allows other types of things. Now, Your Honor's question of where we're analogous to, we're most analogous to Garrett, of why this court's decision in Garrett, of why we're an other relief type of a claim. In both this case and in Garrett, there was a contracting officer's direction to perform at a fixed price for no additional money. Both there and here were analogous.
Let me jump in. We'll give you additional time. So hang in there. What effect does the Bell Helicopter textual case have on this?
None, Your Honor. Bell Helicopter was wrongly decided, and it was decided years before this court's precedent in James Ellett Construction told us what the subject to appeal as provided in the disputes clause language means, and it was decided before Malone and Garrett and Todd and Alliant that told us that other relief, government, other relief, non-monetary claims are broad of substantial breadth. Garrett, and not only that it predated those decisions, Bell Helicopter is simply wrong because it didn't grapple with the plain language.
What did you reverse today? What happens to your claims before the board?
If we reverse on this case, the claim at the board would continue. But we believe that would be irreconcilable with this court's precedent in James Ellett Construction and in Alliant and in Todd that says, and again, to quote James Ellett Construction, A government claim exists regardless of whether a contractor could convert the claims to contractor monetary claims by doing the requested work and seeking compensation afterwards. That was the rule articulated in Garrett. That was the rule articulated in Alliant. The government makes the same argument in every single one of these cases. It's a practical argument, prudential. Why don't you just do something different? Our inquiry is not about what is makes sense and what is practical. We're not the drafters.
One thing that's clear in the law is that the requirements for a that you have to make a claim before you have jurisdiction to get appellate jurisdiction. That's all that's clear, and you don't have a denial from the contracting officer. You do now, but not when you file this case. So there's one part of the law that's clear. You didn't follow that part. You decided to go on this. You still haven't convinced me that we're not looking at the same action in two different forms.
Your Honor, let me have, please, 30 seconds to resolve this, because a claim is either of two things. It is either a government's final decision in the first instance, without a requirement for a contractor claim, without a requirement for certification, a government decision that is final and appealable, directly appealable. That is a claim. You can immediately appeal it, both how the plain language tells us and the other type.
I understand that you want us to rule that this is a government claim. I get that. But how is that different? I mean, the results of the action that's before the board and this case, how are they different? I mean, you're seeking the same thing. You're seeking a reasonable price on behalf of your client. It comes down to dollars. You're seeking a reasonable price. If you're not, then I have problems with this case. If in this case all you're seeking is validation of some legal theory without damages, then you have a different problem.
Your Honor, in this case we're seeking the same thing that the contractor in Garrett sought, which is a declaration that the government's decision was unreasonable so that I don't need to be harmed. That was the relief
in
Garrett.
They ordered you to do extra work for less, for no more money.
And that's
in Alliant, they ordered you to do more work. Did this order you to do more work? It didn't expand the scope of the contract. It didn't tell you have to do more work. It just set a price.
It did more than that, Your Honor. The original arrangement says you can perform and get all of your costs reimbursed. The adjustment of the contract says now you must perform under dispute the entire contract at this low price that we're imposing. It's a different structure. And so it does, just like Garrett, it has a fixed price, and it says we won't pay you any money above that fixed price, and now do this work.
But it didn't require you to do more work for less money than you were promised, because you weren't promised any set level of money at all.
Your Honor, what we were promised is the protections of the plain language of the clause.
Okay.
And the prudential considerations are outside the jurisdictional lines that Congress draws. And the Congress, and as the drafters have enshrined, it's not a practical consideration for us. This comes down to an issue that the drafters have enshrined, that the government makes a decision. The plain language does not require a contractor decision, a contractor claim, before or after. There's no requirement for contractor claim. So where is the claim that is subject to appeal as provided in the disputes clause? It is the government's determination that comes at the end of a lengthy, here, 5-year negotiation process that is approved by the Deputy Assistant Secretary.
What's the relief? Ultimately, let's say you win here. Mm-hmm. What's the relief?
The relief, Your Honor, is that the board looks at a much narrower set of issues and data, and rather than the maximum possible set of areas to put into litigation, they look at a narrow set of issues. What decision did the government come to? How did they come to it? Do they apply the correct standard? Did they make disallowances that were actually consistent with FAR 31 and FAR 50?
To what end does the board go through that analysis?
Just like in Garrett, to get a declaration that the government's decision was unreasonable to prevent the future
harm. Which means more money for you. That's what you're seeking.
Your Honor, what we're seeking is to follow the process, to have the board vacate the price, allow the parties to return the status quo ante, and to now, with the board's clear guidance of what the proper standard is.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that what you're seeking is to have the opportunity to establish, one way or the other, whether the burdens on you or the government's, to establish that the price that was definitized was not reasonable. That's your ultimate relief.
The relief we're seeking, again, is, shall be fashioned by the board. That's irrelevant to our jurisdictional inquiry. But the relief that we're seeking is for the board to find, to examine how the government arrived at its decision. Did it arrive at it reasonably and apply the correct standards? The board can vacate that decision. The resultant is that it sends it back to the status quo ante. We're not seeking a price. We're seeking the opportunity to resume negotiations with the government, now with the board's clear guidance of what the correct standard is that can remove the roadblocks
so
that we had
if
before.
If we send this back, you're not the whole. The board is not going to set a price.
Correct.
At best, it's going to send it back to the CO to say, look at this again.
At best, Your Honor, that's exactly what we're looking for.
And the CO has already told you that it doesn't think what you think is right.
And here we have the changed circumstance of the board's vacating of the price and the clear guidance of what the correct standard is, where the contracting officer erred in the past, and what the correct standard to apply is, and the contracting officer...
And the contracting officer, in the contractor's claim that's at the board... There's a final decision, and the board is going to review that and go up or down on the number, right? And they're going to give you a final number in that case.
That will be years later, but yes, Your Honor. But here,
well, this is going to be years later, too.
Your Honor, we would posit that this is a much more efficient, both from judicial efficiency and dispute resolution
so
efficiency.
Certainly more efficient for you in terms of not having to get a final contracting officer decision and then... try to show error in it, but I'm not sure it's efficient for the overall process.
Your Honor, respectfully, we received a contracting officer's final decision. It's a government claim. It's the government's determination after a five-year negotiation.
I mean, you can keep saying that, but the whole point, we're all you're asking is let's keep doing the negotiation process. I mean, that's the whole point of the definitization clause is the government cut it off and said, we can't agree. Here's the price. If you disagree, challenge it.
This court's presumption is the government acts in good faith. We believe that with the board vacating the price and issuing declaration back, through the guidance back to the court, the parties can absolutely, through the dispute resolution process envisioned by the FAR drafters, the parties can reach a reasonable price either bilaterally or it makes sense to take it out of litigation. Rather, think about the board.
No.
The board and the contractor, the contractor's claim, there's $2 billion worth of cost data that the board is going to sift through. There's 24,000 subcontracts. There's terabytes of information that they're going to sift through. It'll be years before they reach a decision, then it gets published. This is a much more efficient to take it off of the judicial docket, the litigation docket, and to allow the parties to resolve it the way the FAR drafters intended, which is bilaterally with the board's, now the changed circumstance of the board's clear
okay.
guidance.
I think we have I believe we have your argument. But I'll restore your rebuttal time, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Counselor Penta.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, the Armed Services Board of Contract Appeals correctly concluded that it lacked jurisdiction. The Air Force determined and set reasonable prices for its contracts with Lockheed. This was not...
What's the relationship? You heard the exchange that we've had with your friend. What's the effect of the board action on this and vice versa?
Your Honor, we understood the board action or the board decision that the definitizations were not government claims to leave open the possibility argued by Lockheed that if this were a government claim, it is a distinct animal from the contractor claims subsequently filed by Lockheed. However, we understand the court's concern about the potential for mootness. Certainly...
Do you agree with that concern?
It's a good question, Your Honor. We understood there to be a distinction. If Lockheed Martin were correct that this was a government claim, it would be a different... animal generally than the contractor claim that it contractor claims that it subsequently later submitted.
Sure, but if the contractor claim, because they said they've got a final decision, they've appealed it to the board. In that case, the board's going to determine, aren't they, what the reasonable price is?
The board will consider the question of the.
I mean, they're going to put on their proof as to why it should be higher. You're going to say by the contracting officer's decision is right. It's not going to result in a remand, is it? It's going to result in a decision on the merits of this is the proper price. And if they determine that, then what makes a difference if the government didn't do the right procedure here and we send it all the way back? Because he admitted that at best, it's just going to send it back to negotiate already.
The only difference we understand would be the burden of proof. Does government have the burden to defend the entire price that it set? or does Lockheed Martin have the burden to point out the specific portions of that price with which it disagrees? And then those that will certainly limit the issues before the board. Lockheed Martin's counsel said that there will be a narrower set of issues if they prevail here. That's simply incorrect. There will be a much broader set of issues because the government would have the burden to defend the entire price set. As Lockheed's counsel noted, it's a $2 billion project, and the government would end up having to defend that entire price when there is a very small difference between the price that Lockheed sought and the price that the government adopted as part of the definitization. It would.
Okay. Can I just ask you, because, I mean, there is some facial appeal in some sense to their notion that this is a government claim, because there is a process, you negotiate, just by definition, if the government steps in and unilaterally definitizes, it suggests that they haven't agreed and that the government's going to impose something that the contractor doesn't like. And so that's adverse in some sense to the contractor. And why doesn't that fall in line with a lot of our other cases, which have taken a more kind of broad definition of what a government claim is, as a decision that is at least on some level adverse to the government or to the contractor?
Well, I'll start by noting the CDA language of the claim needing to be against the contractor, and therefore, as the court said in Malone, adverse. It can't simply mean that there's a negative effect on the contractor. A change can have a negative effect on the contractor, but it's not considered a government claim. Instead, the contractor must submit a request for equitable adjustment. There, in Malone, the court noted that a written decision is required to be issued by the contracting officer. Here, there's no issuance of a decision to the contractor. And certainly
But there's been a modification of the underlying contract, correct?
Correct.
Does it matter whether we call that an adjustment or a modification?
Well, I don't believe so, Your Honor. However, adjustment being a term in FAR 2.101, it could make a bit of a difference. However, this it would not be a type of adjustment as described in 2.101 that this would not be a written demand or assertion by the government seeking as a matter of right the adjustment of contract terms or other relief. The government has simply followed a contract administration procedure that results in a contract and set a reasonable price. It wasn't asking to adjust contract terms.
So, I mean, your view is not all modifications or changes are necessarily government claims.
Correct.
So, like, they could be, but they might not be. So hypothetically, if you have a contract and, you know, somebody's installing a brick wall and the contract said this type of brick and somebody at the contracting function or the underlying, you know, function says, oh, we don't like that brick, we'd like to use this other brick. If the government issues a modification and says, use this other brick, is that a government claim?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. It sounds more like a change that the government would.
And if the contractor wants to challenge that mm-hmm. because it thinks it actually would increase costs, mm-hmm. then the contractor has to challenge that and say, this is adverse to me. That's mm-hmm. the whole point of the contractor having to challenge modifications mm-hmm. if it's not clear that they're adverse or not.
Correct, Your Honor. Yes, and it certainly.
What about modifications again to the underlying contract? Let's take a look at Appendix 1673. And also page 1674. And look at the top. It says amendment of solicitation, modification of contract. Down in field, are you there already?
Yes,
you down
are.
In field 14, description of amendment, modification, and it's got in there the changes in the obligation. It actually mentions unilateral definitization as a amendment / modification. On the following page, paragraph 1 talks about hereby unilaterally definitized. Paragraph 2, as a result, the above contract price and obligation is modified. it doesn't seem plausible to argue that these changes that are made to the underlying contract are not adverse to the contractor. Number one, and number two, that they're not contractual modifications, in which now the government has a vested interest in protecting.
To begin with, we don't believe they're adverse to the contractor. They are simply the government coming to a reasonable price, which was the procedure agreed to by the contractor.
But it's unilateral. It's a unilateral decision. So it's only the contractor that's saying this is reasonable. This doesn't say that a settlement has been reached or anything. How is this not adverse to the contractor?
Because, Your Honor, we cannot know whether it's adverse to the contractor until the contractor explains to us that it is incurring costs.
Well, you've been negotiating for years on this, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And you don't reach an agreement. Are you saying that the contracting officer or the Department of Defense would not have a notion that this unilateral definitization of price is not adverse to the contractor?
Well, Your Honor, the negotiations related to estimates, and based on simple estimates, there's no way to know whether this is adverse to the contractor. Again, there's
hypothetically, after this unilateral definitization, the contractor could have looked at it and said, "Yeah, that's good enough. That's the best we're going to get." So in that sense, it could have been non-adverse.
Correct, Your Honor.
If it looked and said the government went through this, and we don't know it's adverse until the contractor tells you that price is too low.
Correct, Your Honor, that's our belief as well. And I wanted to point also that the board made a good point that a definitization being a government claim could have a negative effect on contractors, because then they would only have 1 year to appeal to the Court of Federal Claims and 90 days to appeal to the board before they've figured out whether the definitization was in some way adverse to them in terms of them wanting to submit a claim related to it. And as for the a modification potentially being an adjustment, I wanted to just clarify that the way FAR 2.101 reads, though, whoever is filing a claim is seeking, as a matter of right, an adjustment to contract terms, which the court noted in Alliant it must be a demand for something due or believed to be due. We don't understand that the government changing contract terms in some way is the government making a demand for something believed to be due. In fact, I'm not aware of a decision where the government was found to have adjusted contract terms resulting in a government claim. Certainly, again, we believe that this is a contract administration procedure that is not a dispute, and it's more like a routine request for payment, which is not even considered a claim. Certainly, the Air Force was not seeking anything as a matter of right. And Your Honor had asked about the cases in which the court did find government claims, and this certainly doesn't fall into that that sort of field of cases. It's not a situation like a termination for default, in which the issue of the validity of a default termination alone was said to be money oriented. The government is not applying a set off for damages due to contractor breaches in placeway. It's not requiring a contractor to upgrade to a new accounting system, which imposes a cost on the contractor in the cases involving cost accounting standards.
The board based its decision on Bell Helicopter, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Basically, the board said, we have a presidential decision here. We need to follow it. But is Bell Helicopter still good law? There's been a lot of intervening factors between the time that decision was made and this action here was taken. The decision itself is sparse. It is arguably not applicable here for various reasons. Why should we find that Bell Helicopter is adequate precedent here?
Well, I don't believe the court needs to determine that Bell Helicopter is adequate.
To reach your position, do we have to overrule Bell Helicopter?
No, Your Honor. Simply the question of the CDA's meaning and what is a government claim is here before the court de novo. And in Bell, though, we believe it does have continuing validity. It specifically found that the definitization was not a government claim because the government did not seek recourse or payment. It simply set a price, and it did not seek adjustment of contract from the terms.
If we find that it is a government claim, then we overrule Bell Helicopter, correct?
I believe that it would be part and parcel of the board's decision here, which relied on it.
What if we reverse here? What effect does that have on the action before the board, and or if we affirm?
Reversing, I believe the only effect could be the burden of proof that if the entire sort of dispute here is considered to be a government claim, then the government would have to defend its entire price set, rather than if the court does not if the court affirms the claims will move forward, the contractor claims, as they have been before the board, and Lockheed
is
has...
Is there any estoppel concern here? Would the board look and apply any type of estoppel to say that these matters have already been decided by the Federal Circuit and they reversed?
I don't believe so, because I believe the board would simply have before the contractor claims this... A decision affirming the board's decision would only set that this is not a government claim, and therefore a narrower set of issues will be before the board. It'll be clear that the burden of proof is on Lockheed Martin, not on the government.
Thank you. Mr. Matheson, we'll restore your rebuttal time at 3 minutes.
Your Honors, the sole question for us today is jurisdiction. Whether there is a cognizable government claim, the prudential considerations, the practical considerations, those are for the FAR drafters, potentially considered down the road. They're not for our consideration. Why do we know that? Because this court told us expressly that in Alliant. They said the relief is for the board. The practical considerations are for the board. Our only question is that we, the court, cannot draw new jurisdictional lines that Congress has already drawn. If this is a government claim, then it is immediately appealable. We know that it's a government claim because the Contract Disputes Act tells us, the FAR definition, at 2.101 tells us that it can be, and the definitization clause is crystal clear that this is a government claim because it is this government determination that is subject to immediate appeal. The plain language of the definitization clause does not require any other contractor claim.
Show me that language. Show me that language.
In Alliant, Your Honor,
let's look at it.
It's at page 1270, Your Honor. I don't believe it's in the briefing, Your Honor.
1270 of the appendix?
No, Your Honor. Alliant at Penn site, page 1270.
I still didn't get that. It's in your brief or what?
Alliant has cited numerous times in our brief for many of these same propositions. We've stated the rule in Alliant that we cited is whether the prudential considerations that were being brought up, the practical considerations that I heard from this court, I just wanted to bring. We've cited Alliant numerous times at page 1270. It both addresses the fact that if a government claim exists, then the contractor has the right to immediately appeal that. It is not a jurisdictional substitute that the contractor could incur the work and perform the price and then come back and file a contractor claim later. That's the jurisdictional substitute doesn't matter.
I don't think any of us disagree about that if this is a government claim, the board was wrong. But this case doesn't look like Alliant to me. It doesn't look like Garrett. It doesn't look like any of the cases you cited to us, because all of those cases involve the government telling the contractor to do something or give money back or in some way increase cost to the contractor.
And an adjustment of contract terms claim is why this is important, because as we know, an adjustment of contract terms, this is written modifications, adjusting the entire cost reimbursement structure, removing clauses, deleting clauses, adding clauses. It is an adjustment type claim. It's unfortunate this court has not had government non-monetary adjustment claims before. This is a good first one because this fits on all fours with what that test can be.
In the cases involving an adjustment, the remedy is provided because the the facts or the circumstances have shifted, and you have an adjustment of sorts. But can we say that's true here?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I don't know, because you entered into the contract with the government in this case and agreed that the government would definitize the price at a later time. So nothing changed. They just came up with the price, and now you're faced with that price.
Your Honor, what changed is the overhaul of the contract and the insertion.
They just filled in the blanks I pointed out before.
Respectfully, no, Your Honor.
The blanks are filled out, and you had noticed that was going to occur.
Absolutely, Your Honor. We had
the circumstances or a recall of assets or something. That's, in those cases that are a government claim, that's different.
No, Your Honor, it's not different. An adjustment can be broader than what you're saying. And again, the relevant language is not that the government took some administrative action that they're allowed to. FAR 2.1 tells us in the definition of claim that the relevant distinction language is whether it's a non-routine action or routine action. Non-routine action can be government claims. Here, this fits within clearly a non-routine. This is as non-routine as you get. It has to be approved by the head of the contract activity in order for the government to even make this decision. It's a non-routine claim. It is completely drastic. It's an extraordinary right, and the quid pro quo for the government's extraordinary right to impose a price is the contractor's immediate right of appeal that the FAR drafters enshrined. And so whether or not we think it fits under the 2.1 case law, there isn't a lot of it. What is clear is the plain language of the definition clause tells us, enshrines, that if the government makes a determination that the contractor has the right of appeal, and that language tells us that it is a government claim because there are no other requirements for contractor claims, and the word appeal in the Contract Disputes Act means one thing. It means an appeal of an existing government, existing claim. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. We thank the parties for the arguments in this case. The case is taken under advisement.